Reading from the Jiva Dharma, Chapter 9, Nitya Dharma and Material Science. Om Jnana Timurandasya, Jnananjana Shalakaya, Chaksur Amulatam Yena, Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha, Sri Chaitanya, Mano Bhishtam, Tapitam Yena Bhutale, Shayam Rupakadamayam, Siddhati Sapadantikam, Vansha Kalpa Tarubhyascha, Kripa Sindhu Bhayevacha, Patitanam Pavanebhyo, Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Advaita Das offered Digyambar Chotopadhyaya a seat made of leaves, saying, "Come in, my brother, come in. It has been such a long time since we last met." Have you ever read Jiva Dharma? No. Have you heard me speak on Jiva Dharma? No. I'm greetings from Vrindavan. Been really wonderful in Vrindavan. So many visiting people from around the world. And it's a joy to serve them and give them the experience of Vrindavan. I always mention that seeing Vrindavan is like taking a good picture. You need focus and you need perspective. So the perspective is the guide, and the focus is the devotional activities that you do here that clarify the mind. And just like when something's out of focus, you don't see it, or if you don't look at it from the right angle, you don't see it. So Vrindavan, which is Chintamani, it's a desire tree. People can easily miss. So we want to be here and make sure they get that experience and get the most important thing in the world, which is Shraddha, which is faith, which is based on a deep experience, which you can achieve here or you can miss here. So since I came back from Govardhan, it's practically been nonstop. We have the Iranian Vaishnavs, and yesterday the Japanese Vaishnavs. We have New York Vaishnavs. And it's really been wonderful. And yesterday was a beautiful day. We went to the Vrindavan forest nearby to the hermitage of Sridhar Mali. And it's out in the country, only about 15 minutes from the temple, out in the country with the fresh air and the fragrance of the flowers and thousands of untouched acres and brudge with the hearts of the local Brijbasis who have Swabhavika Bhakti, have natural Bhakti, just opening our hearts and chanting. There can't be a more beautiful place in the world to chant. And then sitting down and being served what is arguably the most tasty food in the world. I have two people here sitting in my class that are just smiling and relishing the remembrances of when those hot rotis enter the first bite filled with ghee and is perfectly cooked. And then the offering by the Mali of showering us with fragrant jasmine flowers and soft, non-plastic New York roses with fragrance. You have to have classes on aromatherapy. People just live in the world of aromatherapy. So it was just such a wonderful experience. Some of you may know Megan from the Bhakti Center. She's here. She's here in the class now. And three ladies from our Bhakti course in Yogamaya. And just so many other people. Old friends. The Japanese. Vaishnavs. Yogis, the Bhakti Fest Vaishnavas. Now, this story, I'll just give a little background for people that are here. It's a novel written by Bhaktivinoda Thakur of people coming to Krishna consciousness in Godroom Dweep, which is one of the islands in Mayapur, Navadweep. And coming to Krishna consciousness somehow at the hermitage of Paramahamsa Babaji, some great saints. This is the generation after Lord Chaitanya. So according to who comes, we hear a different aspect of the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. Because different people have different doubts according to they are. Materialists have the doubt whether sense gratification is the goal of life, and they need a particular philosophy. Impersonalists don't have that doubt. They may be very detached, but they have a doubt whether the individuality of the soul is eternal. So different people have different doubts. So, and then people become devotees, and in that way, in one book, Bhaktivinoda Thakur has given a in-depth presentation of all the tattvas or subjects of Krishna consciousness in one book. So now we're back following the story of Lahari Mahasai, who is a sophisticated Brahmin landowner who became a devotee, and his family is pretty freaked out about that. But now he's already been 4 years in the ashram, and his sons really don't even come anymore because they're not going to get him. And, you know, he's become such a Vaishnav. He was proud. He was a beautiful singer and so many things. But one of the Babaji's there, Vaishnav Das Babaji, was previously a Mayavadi sannyasi and became converted to Krishna consciousness. He's very scholarly. He kind of guided him. And, he's just a very, very humble person now. And finally, after 4 years, he gets initiated. Now his name is Advaita Das. Because his family is from Shantipur, and that's where Advaita's from. So Advaita, he's paying obeisances to all the Vaishnavas. He's chanting lakhs of rounds a day. Even his sons try to give him donations to feed the Vaishnavas, and he won't do it because he just doesn't want the connection with them and the influence that comes with money. And he also doesn't want the ego that comes with money. I am hosting the Vaishnavas. I am such a big person. Let all the Vaishnavas come and have the feast that I've... So now what happens is, he's an old man now, and most of his friends have died. But one of his friends, called Digambara Chattopadhyaya, Brahmin, he was a very successful person materially, and he was a Shakta. Now, a Shakta is very popular in Bengal. They're worships of Lord Durga as the material energy. And basically, they have a philosophy of material enjoyment. And they have a lot of Shastra. And this Digambar, he served the Muslim government. And he knew Farsi and Arabic so well that even the Muslim scholars couldn't stand up to him. So at this time, Vaishnavism is not respected. And for good reasons also, a lot of low-class people came and appropriated the philosophy of Vaishnavism for sex cults. And then even if they're legitimate, you know, they're so, it's the opposite of materialism. The Vaishnavas are so simple, and, you know, it's kind of like materialistic parents and their kids could become a devotee. And if they become brahmacharis, they look, that's not their faith. They're thinking you're ruining your life. Eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow you may die. One devotee came to me the other day, very, very substantial devotee from Bosnia. When I was in Croatia, I visited their family, and they came to me, and the two sisters became devotees, and they had a younger brother. He's about 10 years younger. He's about 12. And it's not like the, you know, of New York, where you have all these young people doing kirtan. There was, they didn't have anything to really attract the kid. And he's growing up in that family who's also Muslim. So she told me that the her brother, who's now about 18 or 19, is such a substantial person. He's non-judgmental, but he doesn't really, you know, understand bhakti yet. But he's studying psychology, and he has so much integrity and intelligence and insight. So she was telling me that he's 19. He's very, when I was there, he was a very, like, very handsome, athletic young man. In fact, it was during the World Cup. I don't know, years ago, it was during the World Cup, maybe 5, 6, 7 years ago, I forgot. So, the guy heard that I used to play soccer. So the young kid asked me if I wanted to come and watch a game. It was right near the temple. So, I thought this would be a good way to encourage the young man. I went to his house. He made me popcorn. Mm-hmm. The sister and the parents were so happy because it's kind of like I sat with him. And what she was telling me, the boy is so serious in life. And I could see karmically this person was very powerful. She said one day his father just opened the door. Was so worried that he doesn't have a girlfriend. So worried that he doesn't have a girlfriend. He kind of fought open the door and said, "Are you gay?" And the son just shut the door, you know, telling his sister, I don't even know who I am yet. I don't want to get in. You know, the guy had such integrity, right? He said, I don't really even know who I am yet. I'm trying to discover myself, and I just don't want to get entangled. So the person has integrity. But that's the materialistic outlook. They have faith in those things. I remember when I got into Krishna consciousness, and I was like also 19, 18, I told my parents that I decided to follow the four regulative principles. And they took me to the family doctor. They thought that celibacy was a disease. And they took me to the family doctor. He said, no, it's okay. No harm. So here, this is sophisticated materialism. And now he's just shocked. He's retired now. He was working in the Punjab government. He comes back to Bengal. He is shocked that his friend, his best friend, has become a Vaishnava and just wears loincloth and simple. You know, they see the Vaishnava, it's just simple and renounced. So he's shocked. And so he comes to try to convert his friend to materialism. Digambar sat on the seat expressing his affection with tears, and he said, my brother Kalidas, that was his name before, Kalidas Lahari, where shall I go? Now you've become a renunciate and you don't care for the devas or your religious duties. The materialist also would worship demigods for benefit in the material life. I've come from Punjab with so much help, but now all our boyhood friends have all gone. Only you and I remain. I thought I can cross the Ganga and meet you at Shantipur, and then you can cross the Ganga and visit me in Ambika. We could have spent whatever time remaining singing together and studying the Tantra Shastras. Alas, fate has dealt me a cruel blow. You have become a worthless heap of cow dung, of no use in this life or the next. Tell this has happened to you. This is the accomplished life. What are you doing? What are you doing for the world? Just chanting Hare Krishna? What are you doing? Most people think this way. Advaita Das could see that his boyhood friend was most undesirable company, and he began to devise a way of escaping from his clutches. Because his friend wants to be intimate, but intimate at a level of heart with someone who's a gross materialist won't be good for your spiritual life. One of the principles of a Madhyam Vaishnava is he worships God, makes friends with the devotees, shows compassion to the innocent, and upeksha, he neglects those who are inimical. And neglect means not that he doesn't have relations with them, but he can't be intimate with them. With someone who's inimical. Excuse me. Thinking like this, he said, Brother Digambar, do you remember that day in Ambika when we were playing Guli Danda and we reached the old tamarind tree? I don't know what that game is. Digambar said, yes, I remember. The tamarind tree was next to Goridas Pandit's house. And that's a great devotee of Lord Chaitanya. Gornitai used to sit under the tree. Advaita, brother, as we were playing, you said, don't touch this tamarind tree. And Sachi's son used to come here And if we touch this tree, we should become renunciates. Digabar, yes, I remember. I noticed you had some leaning towards Vaishnav, and I said you will fall into Garunga's trap. Wait, brother, that has been my nature. At that time, I was only on the verge of falling in the trap, and now I have fallen in. Digambar, take my hand and come out. It is not good to remain in a trap. Wait, brother, I'm very happy in this trap. I pray to remain here forever. Just touch this trap once and see for yourself. Digambar, I have seen everything. It seems like happiness in the beginning, but at the end you will see it's just deception. Advaita, and what about the trap you're in? Do you expect to obtain great happiness in the end? Like a materialist. Don't delude yourself, Digambar. Look, we are the attendants of the goddess Durga. We enjoy happiness now, and we will also enjoy it in the hereafter. You think you're happy now, but I don't see you happy at all. Furthermore, there'll be no limit to your suffering in the end. I cannot understand why you've become a Vaishnava. You see, we enjoy eating meat and fish. In Bengal, they call fish Ganga fowl, water fruit. And then some of them they wear tilak and dhotis, they have beads, and they eat fish, some people. We are well-dressed and we are more civilized than you Vaishnavas. We enjoy all the happiness that material science affords. We are deprived of these things. Ultimately, we will not gain deliverance. So it's that faith. How wonderful. Look at you. You're so primitive. We have gadgets and gigabytes. And iPads and iPods and iPhones, and we have all these things. You don't have anything. We're using them to develop more and create happiness because science will improve the world, and one day it'll conquer death, and one day, and all these things of what's called modernity. And actually, this is the philosophy of modernity. To have faith in materialism. It'll conquer everything. It'll conquer disease. Mostly, a lot what material science does in health, it prolongs your life so that you can suffer excruciating pains that previous generations have never experienced before, and at the same time completely deplete your family resources and have your family enjoy a hellish life along with you for a year or two more. Of course, allopathic medicine, of course, Prabhupada said, is also not bad, but you have to be careful how it's used. I'm reading a book called Mortality by the world's most famous atheist called Christopher Hitchens. And I like what he says in the book. It's funny. He said, I don't have a body. I am the body. But he described all the suffering as the prolonging his life. But anyway, you enjoy all the happiness. Advaita, brother, why do you claim that there'll be no deliverance for me in the end? Digambar, no one, even Brahma, Shiva, Vishnu, can obtain salvation if they are indifferent to Durga. Durga is the primeval power. She manifests Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva, and after that maintains them by her active potency. When that mother desires, everything re-enters her womb, which is a vessel that contains the entire universe. Have you ever worshipped the mother to invoke her mercy? Advaita. His mother, Nistarini Durga, a conscious entity or inert matter. Digambara, she is conscious personified and she possesses independent will. It is by her desire alone that spirit is created. Advaita, what is Purusha, spirit, and what is Prakriti, matter? Digambara. Vaishnavas engage only in bhajan. They have no knowledge of fundamental philosophical truth. Although Purusha and Prakriti manifest as two phenomena, they are actually one, like two halves of a chickpea. You take the outer skin off the chickpea, there are two halves. But if the outer skin remains, there is one chickpea. Purusha is conscious and Prakriti is inert. When the conscious and the inert merge into one undifferentiated substance, is known as Brahma. So it's impersonalism. And what you'll see here from this dialogue, that impersonalism doesn't logically make sense. You can only talk in terms of word jugglery and ridiculous analogies. Because if you deny individuality, you deny your own authority to speak. And there's no frame of reference for even language. And there's no need for Shastra and dialogues in Shastra because it's all illusion. But yet people still want to speak philosophically. And you'll see what it'll wind up. So Digambara, sometimes she is female and sometimes male. Advaita. So if Purusha and Prakriti are like two halves of a chickpea covered by skin, which is the mother and which is the father? Digambara, are you making philosophical inquiries? Excellent. We are well acquainted with the truth. The fact is that the mother is Prakriti and the father is consciousness. Advaita, and who are you? Digambara, Pasho Bhadu Bajet Jiva Pashu Mukta Shrita Shiva. One is bound by the ropes of Maya, one is Jiva, and one is when released from those bonds, one is Lord Sadashiva. So we are God, and when we are liberated, we realize that. That's the philosophy. Not ever offering explanation how God becomes covered by illusion. Basic nyayic argument against Mayavad philosophy is if there is illusion, who's an illusion? When you talk about illusion, something must be covered. So if you say the jiva, that doesn't make sense because the jiva is also illusion. Illusion can't be the basis of illusion. Something must be an illusion. Then you have to say Brahman. But if Brahman is an illusion, then there's two problems. One, there's no longer one thing. There's Brahman illusion. And also there's no Brahma because Brahman means the greatest. And the greatest can't be an illusion. So they can't explain why there's illusion. What is an illusion? Illusion comes from some consciousness. So which consciousness is an illusion? And if I am God and I don't realize it, how did I become an illusion? I can't be God. So there's problems with it. And Advaita now is going to point this out. Advaita, so are you spirit or matter? I am spirit and mother is matter. When I am bond, she is mother. When I become liberated, she will be my wife. And wait, oh splendid, now the whole truth is exposed without any doubt. The person who is your mother will now become your wife later? Where did you get such a crazy philosophy? Dingenbar, brother, I'm not like you, wandering here and simply saying, Vaishnav, Vaishnav. I've acquired this knowledge by associating with innumerable perfected and liberated sannyasis, brahmins, and tantrics, and by studying the tantric shastra day and night. If you wish, I can also make you fit for understanding this knowledge. And Advaita thought to himself, what a ghastly misfortune. But aloud he said, very well, please explain one idea to me. What is civilization? And what is material science? And now this tattva, what's the relationship between that? Between the Nitya Dharma. Jiva Dharma means Nitya Dharma. It means the eternal occupation, which based on who we are, not what we've assumed, or not what is covering us, or not what is designated, but actually who we are. What is our eternal duty? The duty that never changes. And that's where we're particles of consciousness, of the supreme consciousness, and we're meant to love and serve it. And all other duties are meant to purify us to come to this point and actually understand that this, and that's the whole essence of the Bhagavad Gita. There's so many duties, but the ultimate duty is what brings you closer to God. And the ultimate duty is your service to God. Digambar. Civilization means to speak courteously in a cultured way, to dress oneself in a respectable and pleasing manner, and to eat and conduct oneself in a way that is not repugnant to others. You do none of these things. Why do you say that? You are distinctly unsociable, for you do not mingle with others. The Vaishnava has never learned what it means to please others with sweet words. As soon as they lay eyes on anyone, they command them to chant Hari Nam. Why is there no other civilized discussion? Anyone who sees your dress will not be inclined to let you in assembly. You wear a loincloth, a peculiar tuft of hair on the top of your head, and a garland of beads around your neck. What kind of outfit is this? And you eat only potatoes and roots. You are not at all civilized. Advaita, deciding to start a quarrel so that Digambar would become angry and go away, which would be a great relief. Does your type of civilized living give you the opportunity to attain a higher destination in the next life? Digambar, culture does not in itself grant one a higher destination in the next life, but how can be society be elevated without culture? If society is elevated, then one can endeavor to progress to other planets. And wait, brother, I may say something if you'll not become dissatisfied, Digambar. You are my childhood friend. I would give up my life for you. How can I not tolerate what you have to say? I am a champion of civilized behavior. Even if I become angry, my words remain sweet. The more a man can conceal his inner feelings, the more cultured he is considered to be. Advaita. Okay? Human life is very short, and there are many disturbances. In this span of life, the only duty of humanity is to worship Sri Hari with simplicity. Studying the waves of material civilization and culture is simply deceiving the soul. I've understood the word civilization is simply another name for civil deception. A human being remains simple as long as he adheres to the path of truth. When he adopts the path of dishonesty, he desires to appear civilized and to please others by sweet words, but internally he remains addicted to deep and wicked, addicted to deception and wicked deeds. What you describe as civilization has no good qualities, because truthfulness and simplicity are really the only good qualities. In modern times, civilization has come to mean keeping one's depravity concealed within. The word civilization, shabyata, literally means fitness to participate in the sabha, a virtuous assembly. In reality, civilization that is free from sin and deception is found only in Vaishnavas. Non-Vaishnavas very much appreciate civilization that is saturated with sin. The civilization that you speak of is not related to Nitya Dharma, the eternal nature of the soul, or Jiva Dharma. If civilization means to adorn oneself in stylish clothes to appeal to others, then prostitutes are more civilized than you are. The only requirement for clothing is that it should cover the body and be clean and free from unpleasant odor. Food is faultless when it is pure and nutritious, but you only care whether it tastes good. You don't even consider if it's pure or not. Wine and meat are naturally impure, and a civilization based on the consumption of such things is simply a society dedicated to sin. What passes as civilization at present is the culture of Kali Yuga. Digambar, have you forgotten the civilization of the Muslim emperors? Just consider the manners in which people sit in the court of the Muslim emperor, how politely they speak and with such proper etiquette. Advaita, that is only worldly conduct. How deficient is a man really if he does not abide by these external formalities? Brother, you have served the Muslim government for so long that you've become partial to that type of civilization. In reality, human life is only civilized when it becomes sinless. The so-called advancement of civilization in Kali Yuga means an increase in sinful activity. This is nothing but hypocrisy. Digambar, look, educated modern men have concluded that civilization means humanism, and those who are not civilized are not human beings. The primary sign of modern civilization is dressing women in very sophisticated clothes and ornaments to conceal their faults. Advaita, just consider whether this idea is good or bad. I perceive that those whom you call educated are merely rogues who have taken advantage of the times. Such people favor this deceitful civilization partly because of sinful impressions within the heart and partly because they see an opportunity to conceal their faults. Can a wise man find happiness in such a civilization? Only vain arguments and physical intimidation can maintain veneration for a civilization of rogues. Digambar, some people say that society is advancing with the increasing of knowledge in the world, and eventually it will be like heaven on earth. Advaita, this is simply fantasy. It is quite extraordinary that people have faith in this. And it is even more bizarre that others have the audacity to propagate such a view without actually believing it themselves. There are two types of knowledge. Paramattika knowledge relates to eternal truth, while Lokika knowledge relates to this transcendent world. Paramattika knowledge does not seem to be increasing, on the contrary. In most cases, knowledge has been corrupted and deviated from its original nature. Only Lokika knowledge seems to be on the increase. Does the jiva have an eternal relationship with Lokika knowledge? When Lokika Gyan increases, people's mind become distracted by temporary material pursuits, and they neglect the original spiritual truth. I firmly believe that the more Lokika Gyan increases, the more duplicitous a civilization becomes. This is a great misfortune for the living beings. A misfortune? Why? As I said before, human life is very short. The jivas are like travelers on an inn. They should use this brief span of life to prepare themselves for their ultimate destination. It would be sheer foolishness if travelers staying in an inn were so caught up with improving the conditions of their stay that they forgot their destination. The more one's involvement with material knowledge increases, the more one's time for spiritual matter dwindles. I am convinced that material knowledge should be used only as much as needed to maintain one's livelihood. There is no necessity for excessive material knowledge and its companion material civilization. For how many days will this earthly glitter remain? Dikembar, I see that I have fallen into the clutches of an unyielding renunciate. And does society serve no other function? Advaita, that depends upon the composition of a particular society. The function served by a society of Vaishnavas is highly beneficial for the jivas. But a society of non-Vaishnavas, or a society that is merely secular, serves no useful function. But enough of this topic. Tell me, what do you mean by material science? To be continued. Any questions? Would anyone like to say hello today?
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj, this is Radhika.
Very, very good. This, I was getting worried that somehow the line was broken. Raja Radhe, Hare Krishna.
And Gail.
Anybody?
Hare Krishna.
Okay. Jai, New Jersey. Thank you.
Hare Krishna, Megan.
Oh, wait. I'll let you say that to her when the speakerphone is on, okay? One second. You can say it now.
Hi, Krishna Gail. Megan. This is Gail.
Hi, Krishna Gail. So nice to hear you.
I hope you are making a list of all the reasons that you want to give me to come over.
I'll start right now.
Okay.
Gail, don't you have any questions? I miss your questions.
Oh, my God. Yeah, today I'm sorry I have to disappoint you.
Want me to make a list for her?
Yeah.
Gail, Vrindavan is so beautiful. And when you're here,
really?
you don't think about anything else.
Really?
It's like you here. You don't remember New York or your family or anything. And the roses here, they're so soft. The petals are so soft. I've never felt anything like it.
And the smell? They have a smell?
They smell really, you just smell really sweet. Just really pure, not heavy, not, I don't know, there's like a lightness to them.
And the scent is nice enough to make me forget all of my worries that you are aware of.
Yeah, there aren't any worries. There aren't any worries in Vrindavan.
You know the worries I'm talking about.
Yeah, but there's running water. Everything is very comfortable.
Okay.
There's running water. There's warm water. When you're getting around, you don't have to walk everywhere. If you're tired, you can get in a rickshaw. It's like New York. You can just get in a taxi.
No, I don't have problem walking. It's, you know, it's my two-hour limit. That's my, you know about my two-hour limit. What?
Your 2-hour limit. Yeah, no, there's always a bathroom because you're always, like, at a temple or unless you're Maharaj, because Maharaj is a Vrijvasi, so he just goes out into the fields and and sings all day. But most of us stay around the temple, so that's never a problem.
Okay. Okay, I think I'm going to start saving up for my ticket.
Yes, start saving.
Okay.
But you keep making a list for me, okay?
Okay, I will.
Thank you.
Okay. Anybody else like to ask a question? Maybe something related to the topic of the class? We can give counseling sessions on private lines. Okay. Anybody else like to say hello? Okay. A lot of times people just write in. I think Gail has the monopoly on unmuted phones. She's got some mystic power from listening to so many classes, because I get lying, you know, it didn't work. I think Gail has a special phone that it's so old that when she unmutes it, it like cuts down the rest of the line.
That's why I'm not giving it up, Maharaj.
Okay. Okay, one more person and then we'll go. Can I tell you that? No. Okay. Okay.
Gail, how good news when I get back.
Okay. Hare Krishna. Anybody else like to say hello? Okay, we'll go now. A bunch of corporate.